49ers game day back in action. Jake and Dieter in a more controlled, slightly more controlled environment.
Slightly.
We're not behind a bunch of Giants peanuts figurines. And
it's true. And I kind of miss it. I kind of miss it already.
It was really, you know how our dogs like to go to their home base? They just want to lock in. Like, I know I'm comfortable here. That's our new home base. We're weird people. Thanks for joining us. You're joining us. We're going to ask the big question today. What would be considered a success for the San Francisco 49ers in this draft? We'll go over a bit of the news and notes of the day, as we always do. And then Jake and I got some more deep cuts, those day three boys that we love so much.
I watched some weird tape this morning. Just some schools that one guy we'll get to eventually. He's just a meatball. Very good at football.
No, but you know. It's working for some of them.
He doesn't have wiggle, but he's got width, and that's what's important, right?
We'll get there. At one specific position, yes. Okay, couple quick notes we want to get to here. One, Logan Ryan retires. What an illustrious 49ers career. I mean, think of all the memories we made ever since he got signed off of that Disney cruise. Nice guy. I really enjoyed talking to Logan Ryan. I will miss him in the locker room, but he played fine. He was okay.
Coming off the streets, good for him.
I don't know if he's fully retired. I did talk to him a bit during the season. He says that he really wants to get into the media. I don't think he'll have any problem doing that. And it's probably why he suffered through my inane questions day after day. So au revoir, Logan Ryan. Eric Sauber is a tight end. He is signed. The fact that he was a tight end who was available to be signed here in the middle of April is probably a sign that you shouldn't be counting on him or not. What do you think?
Just a guy. You know, he's I think they try to get Brock Wright from Lions. Matched that offer. They said, all right. And it's funny, they gave Brock Wright the same deal that they gave the Falcons gave Charlie Warner.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So it was interesting that they did that, and they're like, we don't really want Charlie Warner back. Let's go get Eric Sauber. Yeah, I think it's just they know they need another body. Mm-hmm. I think he played with the Texans last. So, you know, familiar scheme, guy that can just theoretically play decent run blocker from the little I've seen of him. Not going to pretend to be an expert on Eric Sauber.
No.
But, yeah, I expect them to target a tight end in this draft, maybe in the later rounds. I mean, maybe they think Cam Latu will turn it around. I think that would be a foolhardy errand and belief to see him do that. But
a fool's errand and a foolhardy errand.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Really combo those two.
Use of the lexicon. Eric's our Chicago guy. He has been a scheme fit here. If you're wondering what he is, just think Tyler Croft and then stop thinking about that pretty immediately, because obviously flashbacks will come. No question they're going to be drafting a tight end. Well, they should be drafting a tight end. And I saw on NBC Sports Bay Area the other day some Cam Latu tire pumping. So I think they think that too. Let me put it to you this way. There are less subtle ways to get a message across if you want to get a message across. I'm down for putting messages across, by the way. I mean, I've done it before. I'll do it again. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. I do hope it works for Cam Latu. Having a hard time seeing it work for Cam Latu, but here we are.
I didn't see it in the draft again.
You were adamant that he wasn't a good pick. Like
only guy I didn't like in the draft.
And then we get to training camp, and it's like, oh no! First off, I didn't even show up to the first half of training camp. I was on pat leave last year, and the only reports I would get from people are, oh no, Cam Latu. That was especially from you because it was confirmation bias.
Right.
I'm talking third party people who never talked about Cam Latu before in their life. People who just like unsolicited. Just were like, Cam Latu, what's going on here?
Right. Even if you're just like half paying attention, which kind of, listen, that should be the way you watch training camp. But unfortunately, some sickos, including myself, are way too locked in.
Do you still have your notes on all the one-on-one reps?
I do, and I try and hide them away. I at least don't do the thing where, let me just do a brief.
Oh, let's do it. I know exactly
where you're going. Let me brief. So what happens in training camp is, and I think this is a product of the Jimmy Trey Lance thing. That's when it really jumped. It's always happened. And our buddy Grant, I think, has been someone who's sort of shepherded this wave of like tracking all the stats, and it's sort of grown over the years. Right. And I think there is something to letting people know, you know, what the numbers are.
Grant
right?
doesn't do anything if there isn't a market for it. Grant, right. Grant knows the landscape better than maybe anybody. He just doesn't right. doesn't let anyone onto it because that would give away his advantage.
Right. But what happens is you've got, you know, tracking like completion percentages in camp that doesn't include like, oh, this was like a red zone period and this guy yeah. got four snaps here, and it's these, you know, they were trying something, they were running like either the same play or they were yeah. just trying once, but like it doesn't include scheme or all of the things that this isn't like a serious.
Sometimes they practice football and right. it's not all scrimmaging. Yeah, no, right. I'm with you. And as someone who yeah. does sports talk radio, I love it. I love it so much that these people are like, he was 13 of 27 in training camp yesterday. And it's just right. like,
oh, and we'll include like, and when a guy is clearly like would have been sacked, then we'll yes. have this lovely thing where someone would have been sacked. It's like a 7 second play, and then he'll throw it downfield and they'll be like, he had a touchdown. It's like he was sacked.
No.
In real life, like immediately, but the play continues. Throws it. That happened with Sam Darnold a few times.
So many times.
And so as we get to training camp in a few months down the line, I would just caution you all. I try and do it where I include the context of this happened. You know, I get really detailed and way too granular in it. Mm-hmm. But the actual just numbers don't it's not helpful. It's not productive.
I gave up on that a while back. One, because you would miss one rep, you were on the wrong right. side of the field. Like, you just couldn't even get, you're like, oh, I got to get over there.
Yeah.
Then you're the asshole, and we all know who does it. You're the asshole who is sprinting from one practice field to another so that yep. you can, and then you're like, oh, what happened on the last three plays?
You're like, oh, dude, Jordan Mason ran for a half yard. Which direction did he run in?
Who gives a shit? I am a deeply granular analyst. I really enjoy the numbers because I have a heart. You know, sometimes you don't trust your own eyes. Sometimes stuff gets so muddy, and right. numbers can muddy it up too. There's no question about that. But it's nice to have backup. It's nice to have somebody if you're going to go out on a limb. And sometimes, and the numbers typically do that because sometimes I'm out on limbs all by myself. I'm going to need some numbers. I'm going to need a friend. I am trying day in, day out to be more about the vibes, more about who is in control, who right. is performing, what the body language reads off of people are, not the player themselves, but how people respond to them, and asking guys who have been around the block a couple of times why they like or right. and because they've been around the block, they'll say dislike a guy. So I'm trying to lean more into that. I'm not arguing the SEO or the analytical positives in the media landscape of posting that kind of stuff. I'm not debating that. I think it's obvious because now there's such a thing. My question is, as an analyst, as somebody who is trying to get a comprehensive understanding of what's going on so that you can make appropriate predictions in both stories to come in the season and the actual performance to come in the season, how are any of those numbers helping you? And the answer yeah. I have found time and time again is they don't. They don't yeah. help you at all. In fact, they are the kind of numbers that muddy the waters. And now you have this relative rate of confusion. I mean, Brock right. Purdy's numbers, his first training camp, wouldn't have been anything.
And that's something that Kyle, like, he was very explicit when Brock came back before they traded Trey, mm-hmm. this training camp, mm-hmm. where he kept saying like an unnerving amount of times to the point where like, we get it. He kept saying like Brock rips it. And occasionally Trey Lance would do that. And he's like, that's what we want to see more of. And what yeah. he meant is like, I don't care. Like if you throw a pick in training camp, that's the time to do it. Like yeah. throw it, say it with your chest. Like,
yeah, and beyond that, I need to understand that you understand that you're taking a risk. Like, you right. need to be able to have done all of your homework both on and, you know, I guess off the field too, obviously with homework, but like you need to have the good processes, the good awareness, all this stuff to where it's obvious that you're consciously taking a risk. You're going for it then. And so whenever we see Brock in training camp or in practice throwing interceptions, Kyle doesn't worry about that too much.
Right.
Because he goes, again, that's the time to do it. And also, I know X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D, and E all happened before that. And he decided, hey, we're in practice. Let's take a shot.
Right.
But I had this, I had that, or I didn't have this, I didn't have that. Now I have to take it. Like, he can go through all that. Whereas Trey is just like, grip and rip, baby.
Right.
Or should I run up the middle? That was his other fun little thing. Right. He had so many rushing yards in training camp, Jake.
I know. And it was all like, and it was funny about those runs is like we noticed it quickly. Like he wasn't actually, he's not actually fast. Like he has long stride speed. That's decent.
The very first day.
Side to side. Like
I remember the very first day of actual training camp. Cause it didn't look like that at rookie camp.
Right.
But I remember the first day of actual training camp and they ran a bootleg where it was designed for him to actually run it.
Right.
Like it was a naked bootleg. Run, and he looked so slow, and you could
see him recognizing that and going, oh,
there was like an audible gasp. I know I gave one, but I think that collectively we all understood, but refused to process. Like, oh no, and I can only imagine what that film looked like for Shanahan and Lynch and McDaniel at the time. Like, I can only imagine the panic that set in. The second that the guy you just traded 3 first round draft picks for is running out here like last year's Austin Eckler. Like
And like every defensive lineman is catching up to him.
Kevin Givens is on your tail, baby.
Right. Right.
Well, not so much fun.
That brings us back to our initial question here.
What would be a success in this draft, Jake? I just need your strong takeaway. Give me the 3 bullet points, the 4 bullet points, whatever it takes. The 49ers got draft picks. They got 31, they got 63, they got 94. What would constitute a success when this bad boy is all said and done before any of the UFA or undrafted free agents go? End of the 7th round, you look at the whole of the work. What's a success to you?
To me, it's 3 things, but the main thing is number one. Number one is finding an offensive lineman. I actually don't. It ideally would be a tackle.
Okay.
It could be a guard. It could be a center. But finding an offensive lineman who can protect Brock Purdy in the pass game and can become a starter within the first half of the season. And you think, okay, this guy's actually going to be an at least above average starter for us for the next 4 years. That, I think, would be a success for them. The biggest thing they could come out of this draft with, a guy who can play, not necessarily from day one, just because there is a learning curve, but like within the first half of the season, gets on the field and you're like, this guy can play. He's going to play for a while for us.
Okay. I'll address each one of them because we agree on one to a degree. I want to get into that later.
That's one. Two, I think a corner, it could be a nickel corner. It could be a starting outside corner. I personally think Lenore's so good in the slot, and the slot's actually really tricky to draft for. You know, you think you know what you're looking for.
It's all tricky to draft for, my friend.
Right. Right. It's everything in the secondary is a muddled mess where he goes, is this safety a nickel? Is he a linebacker? Is this linebacker a safety? You know, you're just making these guesses.
I do love making safeties linebackers and linebacker safeties.
I think if they can, I love it. The 49ers have done it. Demetrius Flanagan Fowles used to be a safety. So
Fred Warner used to be a safety.
True. So I think coming out of this draft and getting a guy who can not just be like Daryl Luter, like he's going to compete in camp for this starting job and they talk him up all year. Yep. But like a guy who we're not doing theoretically, this guy is good. We've heard good things. Maybe can
you're not compete. Just tossing somebody into the pile. You're like, trying to get someone who's obvious.
I want a corner day one of training camp who I'm like, oh, this guy can play. Maybe
his job to lose.
Right. Right. Okay. That would be a major success for me. And then I guess
give me one more here.
Last one. I wanted to say tight end, but that's sort of it's less significant. I think getting
our list is the exact same.
Is it? Is it?
I think a tell. Okay, I have tight end. I'll give you the last one. How about this? Just general depth. Let's just win it. Just get guys who can go out, and I think much like your argument for the offensive guard or tackle, whomever it might be, or center, get guys who halfway through the season you feel comfortable putting on the field, because there's a very realistic possibility. You have not done that in recent years. You don't have guys who you're signing dudes off the street. You are playing anybody but him. You have a lot of depth that isn't usable from this past season. You are now going to have to rely on them more just because we are another year down the line with veteran players. Get yourself some depth. And if that means you're drafting somebody that doesn't necessarily fit a position in need, so fucking be it.
Right. And they really, for the most part, can kind of draft who they want. They can, like,
for the most part,
you know, you need to get some sort of offensive lineman. I think you'd ideally like to get a defensive tackle. It's not as
needed. And you've had good luck because you're very specific with your scheme on defensive line, that you feel like, you know, come training camp time, you might be able to get somebody who gets cut, something to that degree.
But there are some weird spots in the draft where, and part of it's just us doing, like, you know, PFF mock draft simulator, and it gets weird. But there's spots in the draft where you go, like, I don't really love any of these guys at the positions that fit. And then there's like a random tight end
where it's just obvious, like, hey, I should take this running back here because he's far and away the highest player on,
I will say,
the conceptual board.
If you're the 49ers, don't take a running back before round four. Just don't. I just don't think they should be legally allowed to do it.
I want to go back to the original point on offensive line. I think it almost specifically has to be a tackle. This is an interesting stay the course while everyone else is zagging possibility for the 49ers, in that now guards are getting paid like crazy money.
Yeah.
And the Niners have always undervalued guards, or at least underpaid guards. They're not high, or perhaps they're even last on the positional priority list for Kyle Shanahan.
They're very low,
as evidenced by the fact that they went out and got Christian McCaffrey. So clearly they think something of running back, and they think something of tight end, but maybe not number two or three tight end. Though Brock, you know, we get this whole thing. Quarterback, obviously he's not being paid a lot, but Kyle Shanahan still values them. Maybe not as much as other teams. Wide receiver, he values a lot. He's very specific. Fullback, he values a lot. He's very specific. Tackle, they have a pretty high standard for. They went out and got Trent Williams when Joe Staley retired. Now, they obviously had no alternative, but they didn't, you know, half-ass it. They went all in. Now, the sacrifice they've made on the right side, I don't know how much of a sacrifice it is, because they didn't pay Mike McGlinchey, so we get a little bit less.
And like, McKivitz is a steal. Like, he is not an elite tackle.
He's a bottom half tackle without question. He might be a bottom third.
Yes.
There's a lot of bottom third tackles who lose their jobs, and there's a lot of guys like that who make a lot more money than him. And it is ultimately a shell game. So, interior of the offensive line, Kyle Shanahan believes firmly that he can get by with cheap, and he might not be wrong.
Right.
So when I think about, okay, where are the positional priorities? I think that they'll always be able to find guards.
I'm with you. And I think we have a lot of guys we like on the interior who are late round selections in this draft. And so I think you're right. I think the priority.
I also think it's easier for us to evaluate guards.
Right.
Like, I just think,
especially within the context of their scheme of,
it's obvious what they run.
Right. Yeah. Like, you want a guy who can pass protect. I think that will take on a little bit more of an emphasis than it used to with Brock. Cause now it's like,
he's not tall. He's right. You have to be anchored, and you got to hold your line.
Right. Let's make sure this guy that we are saying we're going to invest $50 million in at some point, make sure he can stay upright and not, you know, perish in the middle of the season because our right guard is getting blown up.
My only argument on why it needs to be a tackle instead of a guard, I would have no problem with them taking a guard, but I think they need someone who is clearly a tackle, because we don't know how long Trent has, and you have the possibility where you will need to replace him within the next year, if not earlier, because of injury. And then two, you don't have the best situation at right tackle, and right tackle needs to become as much a priority, I think, across the league, especially for a quarterback like Purdy, who, yes, he has great escapability, but you don't want to be putting that to the test snap after snap after snap. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not, you know, Lamar Jackson. He's not Josh Allen. He is a very good quarterback, but at some point you do need to protect him. And with the teams loading up on defensive ends, with the defensive end talent influx in the league, it is absurd how much better these pass rushers have gotten just over the last 5 to 10 draft classes. Now, all that talent's in there, and the guys who were really good before have stayed in here. And, you know, you have a team like the Chargers who kind of suck, and they got Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. Like, it's, you know, the 49ers were able to bring in Randy Gregory off the street and trade for Chase Young for a third round pick. Now, neither of those worked out, but like it just shows the level of talent at that position. I think you need to commensurately prepare to have your right tackle either dramatically improve, or you can hold on with McKivitz, but now you definitely needed a tackle because the silverback is gone. So I think that tackle specifically needs to be the priority. And if you want to come back in later, then you can go get your guard. You can get your center.
I'm with you. All that stuff. And that brings me to the I think the last one we did, which if any of you listened to our incredible over-under recorded at Oracle Park, I would actually encourage you to listen to it. It's us at our most deranged. But we were
both completely on and totally off.
That's right. And we were discussing, do you think the 49ers are going to stay at 31? Are they going to trade down? Are they going to trade up? And Dieter was arguing that they are going to trade up.
I've heard enough.
I said trade down. You know, also, we're both open to possibilities. But what
I'll fucking kill you if you say they're going to trade down again. I mean, what a preposterous assertion. Like, what?
But what I love about the trade up possibility is I think that's really the only way you're getting the right tackle. I'm not moved by Jordan Morgan. He keeps getting mocked because he's going to be available at 31.
Yeah.
Because everyone else is like, yeah, he's in the next tier. There's a bunch of tiers of tackles. But
I would rather just take Kingsley at 31 than maybe risk it.
Like Kingsley, and I agree with you.
I think there's just, you know, if you're really optimizing, there's a slight trade down you can make. You have to have, you know, two who are willing to tango, and that has to be good value for you. Otherwise, just take your guy. If it's somebody that you would take within 10 picks, just fucking take him. Just fucking take him. Exactly. It's pick 31. If it was 21 and if the guy was there at 21, he's there at 31, of course you take him. But if he would be available, you know, if you're like, oh, I really hope he's available at 41. Well, then what are you thinking about? Just take him at 31. Don't get cute with this. Take the guy. And I think Kingsley is going to need at least half a season, if not longer, to learn how to play offensive line.
Yeah.
But the frame and the athleticism is so elite that I think that's worth the trouble. So you can throw him in there at right tackle and just say, figure it out. Because sometimes that's what McKivitz looks like he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He doesn't have the physical ability to do it. Kingsley has all the physical ability to be an elite run blocker, pass blocker, everything guy. He just doesn't know what he's doing. So at some point, the two shall meet.
Right. Right.
So I think if it all works out, he is not just a Trent Williams replacement. He is a player on the level of Trent Williams. Whereas I don't see the upside. I love a lot of the upsides on these guys. Obviously the floor is very low with Kingsley, but I feel like Kingsley could very well be the best offensive lineman in this draft. And there's some really good offensive linemen in this draft.
But I love the confidence.
He's so smooth. If you just teach him to do what the fuck he needs to do,
right,
there's a high level. And a lot of people will immediately go, well, why didn't he learn it at BYU? Well, they moved him around a couple of times and he's still young. Yep. So he's coming out. I think he's a redshirt sophomore and he played two different positions before that. So,
yep.
You know, and I don't know how BYU's offensive line coach is. You'd like to think they're good, but you know, it's college.
Yeah. I think him and Kieran Omega DJ from Yale are in the same boat to me, where they're both.
But I don't have to worry about the level of competition with Kingsley.
Yeah.
I've seen him wreck dudes in the Big 12 and say what you will about Big 12 defenses. Like, there's some good pass rushers in the Big 12. So
I'm with you. I'm with you.
Let's talk about the guys that we really like to talk about, which is our day three. These are the dorks. These are the guys that we're into.
We found some lads.
It's getting real deranged real fast. So let's start with somebody on my end who is not at all deranged and, in fact, is a pretty well-known player. This is Jordan Travis, the quarterback out of Florida State. And when we talk about day three options, I'm just a really big fan of his game because he is pretty good at everything and great at nothing. And he really, I mean, maybe it's the 13 on the chest. He really reminded me of Brock. Now, the processing is not at the same level, but it's good. It's solid. He sees the field well. I think he makes good decisions. He had an elite amount of talent around him. In theory, the same thing should be said for the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, he takes shots. He has some devil-may-care attitude. This was a legit Heisman Trophy finalist. He can make plays with his feet. Now, he had a gruesome leg injury. That should be in the rear view. I think that when we talk about sort of that second tier, right? So we know the third, the 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks. We talk about a Bo Nix. We talk about a J.J. McCarthy, who I believe is very much a second tier quarterback. We talk about a Michael Penix. I think if Jordan Travis had stayed healthy, one, Florida State would have competed for a national championship. And two, he'd be very much considered in that class. Everything that I can get my hands on today, whether that just be, you know, texting with people or, you know, going to people I trust who publish this stuff, this is a day three pick. Jordan Travis is going to be there on day three. Now, someone might fall in love with him, but, like, I think they're going to fall in love more with the Spencer Rattler. They're going to fall in love more with, you know,
People have been falling in love with Spencer Rattler.
They can flip him.
We're on the same page on that one.
I would rather have a guy who can juke out the entire Southern Miss defense and just keep, you know, I really enjoyed watching him. By the way, the running back for Florida State, I forget his name. He's so good. He's like a second or a third round pick.
But it's not Shipley, is it?
I think it's Shipley. He is unbelievable. Every player I like seems to be from Florida State. I don't know who I've become. I was once
I'm with you. It's very, very weird.
I was once proudly aligned with the U, but it's impossible.
Oh, sorry. Trey Benson.
Trey Benson. That's it. Correct. Trey Benson is a delight.
Come on.
You're supposed to be the draft guy. So I think Jordan Travis, day three, you're in a weird spot, right? You're just thinking, hey, I really like this guy. You know, maybe too early to take that guy. You're just sitting there. You got a bunch of these comp picks. You trade a couple of them. You got this extra fifth you don't know what to do with, and you just go, fuck it. Let's ride.
Yeah. That said, because the 49ers do. I guess it's like, why not? You're right.
You can cut his ass. You can cut Brandon Allen's ass if you want. This is the exact same scenario that they had with Purdy. And I'm not saying this guy's going to be Purdy. I was just saying, like, I can think of way worse ways to spend a fourth or a fifth round draft pick than just doing this, because it just seems as if he would be so comfortable. He's not a great, like, dissector of the field, right? He's very one read. Now, there's a couple of times where, you know, he's a little slow with the progressions, all this, but, like, he's usually locking on to Keon Coleman or whomever and then just saying, okay, we're going to rip it. That's fine, because you can teach some field vision, but also it's fine because you're in a Kyle Shanahan offense. And so, yes, it'd be great if you could do your 5-man progressions every time and you are just a super computer, but he also has, you know, he was not even a quarterback when he went to Florida State. They brought him in as an athlete and he figured out how to play quarterback, and he played it at a Heisman Trophy caliber level. Like, I'm willing to roll the dice on Jordan Travis because he's there day three. And I think he is a legit first round, second round talent. Kind of that.
I love it.
If he had stayed healthy, it would never be, but, like, he would be a legitimate option at 31. And meanwhile, you're telling me you can get him at like 100. Come on now. I think of worse ways to do it, especially if you have your homework done for day three.
And here's the thing. The real, like, galaxy brain smart move that no one does is draft a quarterback just every single year.
Every year. Just take the best quarterback on your board who's there on day three. Dedicate a round to a quarterback. You know how Kyle Shanahan dedicated the third round every year to drafting a shitty player as some sort of like an equal opportunity situation? They should just do that every year. Hell, make it round three. The fuck do I care? But pick a round. You're going to lose on at least one pick every year. Guaranteed. It's they probably
love,
two.
Yeah. They love losing on round three.
Think about all the weird transactions that happen throughout a season that turn into like, oh, this is take a guy who you don't think is actually going to give you, but maybe 5 to 10 snaps a game and trade him for a 6th round pick every year. And then every year in the 6th round, go out and draft a quarterback and just keep the rotation going. Because
I mean, they traded. Off, they
that,
traded
that Keon Coleman. Catch.
Yeah, I know.
It's insane. I'm sorry to all the listeners. We have really been. We're gonna get it together. I promise.
We just been reacting to videos and pointing out things on the screen and the people who are listening. Or
the war room was really fun to do on video. We will do it again on video. It was the worst podcast I've ever listened to, and I've listened not just of my voice. It's the worst podcast I've ever listened to.
Go listen now.
It's honestly worth the trouble. It was so bad. Okay. Can we talk about some? I think we're in cahoots. But Jordan Travis, I just think the value is there at an incredibly high level. I think
he's a
really good player.
I'm with you on that.
And I think he would fit. Who are we going to talk about on your end?
Let's go to Malik Mustafa, safety out of Wake Forest, who he is a little short. But he's got he really packs a punch. He flies down.
Can you lay down how big he is, what he did, where, you know, kind of give me the lay of the land and then where you expect him to go, and then we can get into the nitty gritty.
Yes. So Mustafa, he went to Florida State. I mean, sorry, Wake Forest.
Listen, at this rate, it's all Florida State. I had a list of 17 guys for Florida State where I'm like, I really like this guy. Dorfell's really good at his job.
I know. All right. He's not from Florida State. He is from Wake Forest. Malik
played
Mustafa,
well against Florida State, though.
He did. He played well against a lot of teams. He is 5'10", which is, you know, 17th
Stumpy
percentile. But he's got 210 weight, which is really good. Had a great bench, 41.5-inch vertical. More than 10-foot broad jump. His 40-yard dash, 4.54, well above average. So he tested not like top level in terms of speed, but his play speed is elite. Like when this guy flies downhill, it's super impressive. And
there's a real separation between him and other ACC players too. Like it's just obvious that he knows what's happening before anyone else does. And like the ACC is not a great conference, but it's not a shitty one either.
Right. And when you're undersized, one thing I look at in terms of tackling is like, you know, are you just reckless and flying in there with your head? He's getting downhill quick, but his form is really good. Like he gets guys in the thigh, he gets them down. It's really impressive. And so, you know, one thing I looked for whenever you look at a guy who, you know, maybe has a Talanoa Hufanga streak in them where they're not necessarily the biggest guy and you see them around the box making plays, it's like, okay, well, does he have coverage ability? And I want to say it was against Florida State, the one clip I sent you. He got targeted deep. And, you know, whenever you're watching this tape and you don't have the all-22 angle, you're like, all right, where's the safety going to pop up at?
Right.
And he made this incredible rangy play, breaking up what would have been a touchdown. Like his safety got beat. I mean, his corner got beat bad on a skinny post inside, and he like truly saved the touchdown with a great breakup. So he's got range. You know, again, the size could he play nickel? Maybe I think that's
he might be a little big. He might be a little thick for Nick.
Right. I think you probably
put that on a t-shirt.
I think you probably want to keep him at safety. But his athleticism is outstanding. I think his play recognition is really good. I need to see more of him in coverage to really see where he's
really
at there.
Safeties.
But, I mean, he jumps off the film. Super fun to watch. And also, just an awesome name for a safety. Like, you can picture
Malik Mustafa.
Like, that's intimidation. I think every safety needs to have, at some level, an intimidating name. And I think he's got it. So I'm a fan. I don't know exactly what round he is.
Funga.
But he's.
And then Earl Thomas.
Who was the craziest of them all?
Ed Reed. Neither crazy nor crazy name.
Yeah, maybe Ed you Reed. Need this. Maybe you need the simplest name.
No, it doesn't. I mean, Jair Brown is sort of a mix. And Jair is you know, not the most common, not the least common. Brown.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I like Mustafa.
Where do you think he goes?
It's tough to gauge. I think he's round
he's day three for sure.
I think he's round three at the earliest. Okay. But he feels to me more like round five. Maybe
just
round
because
four.
Just because he's not, he doesn't have the look.
It's tough. I'm not sure exactly what the knocks are. I mean, safety is such a weird position. Mm-hmm. It's like really tough to know like what teams are looking for. You know, and consensus boards have him. Yeah, usually is like a day three pick. Yeah, like 149 is, you know, sort of his range.
Yeah.
Right behind like Sione Vaki, Utah, and Tyke Smith, Georgia. So that's like early round five, I think, round four. So
yeah.
that seems like his range for me, which sounds right.
And that's honestly the weird thing about day three stuff where you're like, oh, well, this is his range. Well, that the later you go, the wider the range is.
Right.
So that means that he could be taken in the third round or the seventh round.
For sure.
So when we say day three talent, it's like you could sneak it. You could sneak in. Someone might get you before the end of day two, but they could also like you'll get drafted, but you might have to wait a while, too, because then.
Right.
It just things get really weird and messy, and there's a reason they don't show all those picks on ESPN.
Yeah, I have trouble seeing him fall behind round five just because of the athleticism, but we'll see.
A guy that I this isn't a guy who's on our list here, but Cole Bishop out of Utah is another option in sort of that range, and he has a lot of the same things, a little bit taller, though.
I think
he's 6'2", and pretty good burst. Not as fun a tackler as Mustafa. Right. Mustafa's out there. And when we're talking, you know, listen, you want to go back to the cover three, the way that they want to run cover three, we'll see if the shadow government allows it. But if they want to go back to Legion of Boom, Seahawks legends and all that, you need an actual strong safety to be playing Sam linebacker in essence. And I think Mustafa is a really interesting possibility there because what do we talk about? I don't think he can play linebacker in a true sense, but you're not really asking him to. Sam linebacker for the 49ers is different than actual Sam linebacker. There's no such thing as Sam linebacker anymore. There's a strong safety in the box or nothing. And then otherwise you've got two weak side linebackers, one who just happens to be on the strong side, and then, or another middle linebacker, like not to get granular here too late, regardless. You know, you're not putting, you can put him up too high. He can make the plays. He is a game breaker and a playmaker. Is what I noticed off of him, which is something you're looking for. The same thing can be said for Hufanga. Okay, so now you got that replacement. But also, unlike Hufanga, I wouldn't feel terrible if he got motioned out into the slot. Right? Yeah. Whereas if I think a lot of defenses, and we saw this specifically in the game where Hufanga tore his ACL, he would get motioned into the slot again and again and again. They would figure out that the Niners were in man-to-man because Steve Wilkes had no defensive ideology. And they'd figure out they were in man-to-man. And that will still happen, even as they go back to cover three. You're in man-to-man. And he'd just get motioned out. And then now he's in the open field, and whoop, there goes his knee. It was bad to begin with. He was getting burned left, right, and center. And then you get Chris Godwin on him and it's over. Right. So I feel good about Mustafa in that sense. I think Bishop could do the same too. I think Mustafa's a better player and is definitely going to fit the John Lynch mold a little better.
Right.
We got to remember who's making the ultimate call here. Yes, it's Kyle, but it's really more John than ever before. And if John Lynch sees John Lynch, he's taking John Lynch. That's the reason Fong is on the team.
We also, one important factor that we actually love to talk about and have not talked about.
Oh, yeah.
This cycle, at least that much, is the crazy. And maybe we need to rebrand it into a more, I don't know, palatable term. But there is an element of, especially if a guy's slightly undersized, they need to have no fear for their own well-being.
Right. Bring that wood.
Do they, like, if you're out there and you're like, oh, no, let me Let me take a play off. Let me play it safe. Let me make a business decision. If you're on defense, you definitely don't get to do that. You can sometimes do that at other positions.
Yeah, I think it's, but I think the wood, the crazy, whatever we want to call it, we'll come up with a better term. I mean, honestly, the crazy is a pretty easy term to recognize, but
the football crazy, because these guys are great off the field, but
I mean, some of them are.
You never know.
You never know. But that's almost more of an offensive thing. And let me tell you, I got a guy who's got it. Oh boy, does he got it. I love this little bitty man out of Troy. His name is Kamani Vidal. And Kamani Vidal is a bowling ball with legs. He is 5'7", 213 pounds, and he runs a 4.6 40. He has a 4.15 shuttle, so he is a straight line runner. We are thinking here very specifically Elijah Mitchell replacement. You know that player that I was saying, hey, yep, if you can get like a 6-round draft pick, he is your Elijah Mitchell replacement because you trade Elijah Mitchell on draft day. Oh, he's a great runner. He's really fun to watch. You trade Elijah Mitchell on draft day for your future quarterback round pick, whether that be 5th, 6th, or 7th. Just whenever you take your quarterback in the future, you trade Eli Mitchell for him because you don't trust Eli Mitchell anymore, clearly. And they're not going to put J.P. Mason or Jordan Mason, whatever
and this,
you want to call
him. Actually after Mitchell like was productive for the last, you know, few weeks.
He's a wonderful player.
At least looked like himself, but his contract's about to expire. Yeah.
He's Willy Wonka. He's two steps forward, one step back. Every time he'd play, immediately after, he'd be on the injury report.
Yep.
At a certain point, how you need 2 years, 3 years of this in a row? Now, they went out and they did a bold thing and got Christian McCaffrey, which was so bold because Christian McCaffrey's entire knock was he couldn't stay healthy, and now he's been nothing but healthy. And so it's like, okay, let's just run the scenario here real fast. Is Christian McCaffrey going to play 17 games this upcoming season? And the answer is no. If you're betting on that, you're fucked. If you're betting on you are. Now, I'm not saying that he won't play 14 or that he won't play 50, but he is going to miss a couple of games, as we saw. He had to miss a couple of games at the end of the season, and then he wasn't himself after the fumble. Maybe that was more mental than physical, regardless, in the Super Bowl. You need a backup running back. You are not, and I think that we have talked a bunch about, hey, go and get a Christian McCaffrey type. Clearly, Kyle likes that. Now, I think Christian McCaffrey is considered a one of one in Kyle's mind. He's the only running back. So when we talk about guys who fit that sort of Shanahan mold, the guys like Elijah Mitchell, who we had identified alongside the 49ers at the time, and that, there was no crossover there. Sometimes we get some crossover. There was no crossover there. What is it that they like to do? One cut and go. I know they're bringing in more man scheme. I know they're doing more gap stuff. It is one cut and go. Can you get upfield? This team needs their A.J. Dillon. This team needs an Elijah Mitchell that can actually stay on the field. Let me give you some quick stats here on Vidal. For if you haven't already bought in watching the highlights, he's not going to catch the ball out of the backfield very well. He should be a good run blocker, mainly because I don't know how he couldn't be. He's basically as wide as he is tall. But he ran for 1,700 yards on 297 runs last year. Okay? That's last year. 771 carries in his Troy career. 4,000 yards, 34 touchdowns.
It's pretty good.
He did not fumble once. He carried the ball 771 times in his college career. He ran for 1,700 yards on 297 carries last year. From his freshman year to his senior year, he did not fumble once. He is a 7th-round pick, maybe. You take him in the 6th and you never think about it again. This guy is awesome. Is he going to win you your fantasy league? Fuck no. Is he going to win you football games? Yes. You need somebody like him in November and December and January to just give McCaffrey a breather, to just run into a defense.
And I think they're going to do more of that this year.
And get 4 fucking yards. This guy is it. Kamani Vidal goes almost to the top of my board in terms of this is a guy the Niners got to have.
I love it. No, I'm you know, just watching him.
I'm deeply passionate about
this. He's got like, it's one thing to be able to cut, but to have the timing on cuts where that's what gets you the extra 15, 20 yards. And then he's just, it's like Elijah Mitchell where he packs so much more punch in his size than you'd expect. He's so hard to tackle on every single one of these plays. He's just awesome to watch.
We love Sun Belt running backs. That is a thing. It has been a thing. It will remain a thing. We love Sun Belt running backs. You can make the argument, hey, man, it's the Sun Belt. What do we know? I know that he went for 1,700 on 297 last year, and he had 34 touchdowns in 4 years. I know that he never fumbled once. If you're going to go down, and by the way, I think Sun Belt's a very positive league. Like, I'm not trying to shit on the Sun Belt. I covered Sun Belt football for a long time. I cover conference. Like, I know these. We're not talking D2. We're not talking 1AA. We're talking or FCS. We're talking about, you know, a conference that had a New Year's Six team in it this season. So Kamani Vidal was a man amongst boys at a pretty damn good level. I'm not asking him to run it 297 times. I'm asking him to run it 70 times next year. And I think he'll give you 5 yards on every one of those carries and break two of them because of the situation. And because of, hey, you know, Kamani Vidal's in, we don't have to worry about the running back right now. Right. Pow. Right in your face.
I love it. I have a guy who's, I don't think, you know, I feel like I should have gone first on the running backs because my guy excites me a little less than yours.
Okay.
But I've got a Boise State running back by the name of George Helani.
Yes, sir.
Who last year, he had 134 carries, 748 nice yards, seven touchdowns, 5.5 per carry. He missed like a month and a half, almost two full months after they played Washington, which is just, I don't know what the injury was, but what happened against Washington is he had to pass block a ton where they were just like, oh God, oh God, oh God, you got to stay in and pass block for us. He is not, I would say, as shifty as Vidal at all, but
he's got some open field moves though.
He does. He does. He
once he's past the line of scrimmage, he'll do you something. Right. It's a nice, nice cut and go. You know, he's good.
He's got truly the most average size, 5'10", 210, you know, truly like 50th percentile.
Yep.
Great explosion, 39-inch vert, good broad jump. And he tested pretty well speed-wise, 1.58, 10-yard split, which is 72nd percentile, 4.5, 240. Right. It's like you just need to have like a good enough and then show me on tape. But like this guy is physical, like the fact that he has pass blocked, he's sort of a different type of back. I think he's
a really good player. If you're looking for a possible RB1, he has that upside as a day three pick, right? Like you can see this guy being a fantasy football dude because he's good hands out of the backfield. Crisp routes.
He did genuinely everything at Boise State, which is
he's a three down back.
Like look the last play we just watched, he got a screen, five guys were around him, ripped it off, ran.
He's
it
a wonderful
for a touchdown.
Player. He really
also
is.
Just fun to watch Boise State running backs on that absurd field. Yeah. You know?
But he makes a lot of guys miss in the open field. We're talking Mountain West, so a level up from Sun Belt. You know, here he is against UCLA and just
he had a great game against UCLA.
Five. Okay, took five guys to take him down, and he ran 40 yards.
This was in the
LA Bowl. Rob Gronkowski LA Bowl.
The Starco Brands.
Wasn't it hosted by Gronk?
I think it used to
be the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl. And he's you know, whatever.
Yeah, in that game against UCLA, which aside from Washington, probably the toughest opponent he faced. He
one had cut go house.
17 carries, 138 yards, two touchdowns, one reception, 45 yards. He's a very good player.
I like him a lot.
I think
what
that's
round?
Very clear on tape. I think he's looking like a fourth rounder from what I'm seeing. Apologize to any of you who heard me pronounced fourth like that.
Fourth.
Yeah, he
round
is.
Round four. Okay.
Oh,
so
we're
talking.
He's on some boards, he's looking undrafted. It's unclear who these boards are coming from.
No, yeah,
from,
no.
From if, what if I'm looking,
the mock draft database is only good as
for like the first
a,
three rounds.
Well, not even that. It's only good when you look at the overall number because the boards are mostly comprised of fan fiction, essentially.
Right. I think I here's the thing. I think we get Dane Brugler's beast in this next week, tomorrow. Thank God. Because here's the thing. That's the most valuable resource in terms of just knowing where guys are kind of supposed to go. Brugler's also just a freak in that he breaks down every player. And we haven't,
neither of us have texted anybody about George Helani.
No. No, we have not. But the one board I'm looking at had him at 400, peaked at 174. So to me, he's a fifth through seventh round guy.
Yeah.
Which
I think he's a really good option. I think he is, again, he is an option to be an every down back. I think Vidal is more of an Elijah Mitchell type where you're like, ooh, he's your every down back. Really? He's the guy you're using all the time. He's a strict one-to-one replacement for Elijah Mitchell, a strict one-to-one replacement for JP Mason. I don't think he's going to help you on special teams at all. So that matters. Whereas Mustafa, I didn't see his tackling ability in the open field, but I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player. And I have a feeling like Malik Mustafa will be mentioned a lot in August and September.
Yep.
Wherever he is, I feel like everybody who plays fantasy football is going to know about Malik Mustafa. And he'll just be like Solomon Ahmed? What's Ahmed's name?
Oh, like you mean George Dolphins? Helani. George Helani. So we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
George
Helani, Malik Mustafa.
Glorious day when fantasy football guys start getting into drafted free safeties in the fifth round, because we should have.
No. You were talking, you're in a league with a individual defensive player, which
it's tough.
Levels of depravity beyond what I could possibly
imagine. You just need a guy who gets a lot of tackles. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked
here. All right. Sorry. George Helani, I think, is going to be a guy that wherever he goes, people are going to know, because he's going to have a great training camp and then he's going to look really good in the preseason. And then everyone's going to be like, what's going on with this Helani guy? And I don't know if he'll have an impact immediately, but I think a lot of people will know. Like JP Mason and Elijah Mitchell are still drafted in fantasy football.
Right.
Their last round picks are just, the first guy off the waiver wire.
Right. They're just on the hope that, like, for 2 seconds, you know, Christian McCaffrey will be out, and they're going to get the production in the 49ers offense.
Let me tell you about a guy who won't get drafted. Now, I haven't gone into the ins and outs of why he won't get drafted, other than he basically played a lot of edge. His name is Bo Richter. He played at the Air Force Academy.
I think he's going to get drafted.
We talked about him in the war room. And your argument, and I think it was very fair, is I don't trust guys who played at the Air Force Academy. This guy doesn't look like anybody who usually plays at the Air Force Academy, Jake. This dude is a little muscle ball who is out there with pain. He is out there looking to inflict pain. His technique is perfect. He is an unsurprisingly perfect technique. And you go, well, of course he plays at Air Force. They're going to have perfect technique. They don't have the best athletes. This guy's an athlete. This guy's an athlete through and through. He has a 9.91 RAS, 4.56 40-yard dash, 2.57 20-yard split, 1.56 10-yard split. Those are all elite numbers. 40-inch vertical, 10-foot broad jump. He is only 6 feet tall. That is true. 6'1" if you're being extremely generous, maybe in the right cleats. 248 pounds. He can bench press 24 times, as you probably could have noted just watching him. In his highlight film, he's got some biceps, and I bet the pecs are popping too. This guy is not going. You can line him up at edge. You can. I think you could. Now, you do not want to be doing that all that often, because you will get burned time and time again, because he's just not that big. And he does have that explosion stuff. I think you take a year and you say, we are going to turn you into a hybrid outside linebacker who can go to will. We are going to just turn you into a hybrid go fuck dude up player in our defense, which I do think that Brandon Staley might have some inclinations of doing, because he gets a little funky with some dudes who are, I've been, you know, one hand in the ground my entire life. Well, you stand now, son. All this stuff. I just want him involved with my team. I'm taking out the Air Force stuff. I'm taking out the, you know, you have to presume his character and all that. I'm not talking about, you know, having a member of the troops on your team and, you know, standing strong. I'm talking about this guy looks like he loves playing football more than anything else on the planet. This, you want to talk about the crazy? I don't think it's crazy. I think this is passion. And the way that he plays with this perfect technique and the ability to move his hips in the open field, I mean, he's wrecking Mountain West tackles.
Like the way he moves truly looks like an elite defensive edge.
That's
like,
right. I think you can. I think that the way he moves, you can imagine him playing actual linebacker and being really, really good at it because he has a lot of open field agility that is not necessarily recognized in some of these highlight videos. But when I dug a little bit deeper, he just makes plays.
There's a ton of panic in these quarterbacks' eyes who are like, I'm playing Air Force. Oh God, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, he's rocking James Madison here. James Madison was a very good team this past season. I think that Bo Richter in the seventh round has a real chance of being just a winner for you. And if nothing else, I know this, he is going to be your best special teams player on day one.
Oh yeah.
You just paid Jordan $5 million, all this stuff.
Fuck also that. Galaxy brain thought talking about, you know, the special teams changes, the kickoff returns.
I know
you want to get funky, do any of that reverse stuff where he's going to be a blocker on special teams. He's a guy you want blocking.
Yeah.
Where he's you can get man. In, get into a rugby scrum. He comes out of it, goes the other way. I'm just saying.
I'm telling you, I bet this guy. Oh, geez, what's his name? Oh, shit. Nick Ballor. Nick Ballor played fullback. Nick Ballor played kind of H-back, Y tight end, played linebacker, put him in. This guy's got some Nick Ballor in him.
That's a great comp.
And Nick Ballor has been in this league for like 14 flipping years now, it seems
right.
like. Just floating around. But every team he's on, he plays. Every team he's on, he's never going to win you a fantasy league or anything. But like, I bet this guy could play. I bet this guy could play fullback. I bet this guy could play tight end. I bet this guy could line up on the edge. You go five wide on the or five across on the front again. I want him in there. I want him making stuff happen. I think he could be a middle linebacker. I think he can't play like nickel. He's too thick for the nick. But like, you have him as your strict Sam linebacker. Hey, we're going heavy. We're going true 4-3 on this one. You put him in there. He can move. He can cover.
Yeah. No, dude, he's the perfect when this next NCAA game comes out and just going to lose. We're going to ruin our relationships and, we're all going to be in deep trouble with the people who love us the most because we're going to, create these alternate realities where we're scouting and and it's going to be really fun until it comes to crashing to an end. But he is the perfect athlete.
You at the University of Missouri.
Right. He is the perfect, like, for some reason, he's just like a 3-star, even though he should be a 5-star. And you go and recruit this guy and you're like, oh, my God, I stole the best athlete in the class. I'm going to play him at every position because I'm at this small school. But we're Southern Mississippi, and this guy's going to play. This guy's going to play edge rusher. He's going to play tight end, wide receiver. We're going to run him out of the Wildcat.
That's right. That's exactly right. I just want Bo Richter in at training camp just to see.
Yes.
Just to get weird with it. And if that means I got to waste a 7th-round draft pick instead of getting him as an undrafted free agent, so be it.
Right.
So be it. Put that pressure on the Air Force Academy to get him out of his obligations.
All right.
I love Bo Richter. And then finally,
one guy who, let me just say, we've looked at a lot of great names.
I'm not going to lie.
McAllen Castles.
I'm not going to lie to you here. We got to be very, very blunt. When this guy turned out to be white, I was stunned.
McAllen didn't tip you off that he was like an heir to. He went to, I believe he went to Davis for a couple years and then he transferred. Davidson. What?
Davis? Where the hell's Davis?
UC Davis.
UC Davis. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about like. I knew he was from the South. Right. I'm like, what?
Right.
UC Davis.
Yeah, he went to UC Davis, I think, a couple of years.
Fine establishment.
I think he grew up in Tahoe. He actually grew up in Tahoe.
Oh, okay.
And then he transferred to Tennessee, where he kind of played fullback, tight end, and it's one thing like when you look up guys, because I kind of start tight end based on athleticism. Like I need a floor level of athleticism and he's really got it. His weight is maybe a little light. I don't care. I don't see that being a problem on tape.
Well, they said the same thing about George Kittle.
Totally. His vertical is great. 37 and a half inches, great broad jump, more than 10 feet, 40 yard dash, 4.66, I believe. Really good 10 yard split, above average shuttle, above average cone. So he can move, but when I watch him, like he's most of the time kind of playing in a fullback role where, and he's like truly blocking. Sometimes they'd insert him up the middle. They did a lot of weird things at Tennessee because they've got Joe Milton who can just, they're like, Joe Milton, just go do weird stuff and huck it, I guess.
I don't know if they ran an offense at
Tennessee. They kind of didn't. But Castle's
fast break,
fast
break offense.
It's chaotic watching it. But
he's the Jonathan Kuminga of the Tennessee offense. Is that what's going on here? Where it's just like leaking out. Just like, hey, I'm going to get like five dunks a game.
He did have a touchdown against Alabama on leak. So you go. But no. He wasn't targeted all that often, I think. And, most tight ends don't have great college production. He had 22 catches, 283 yards, five touchdowns. Like, that's pretty good at Tennessee. Like, that's solid. Yeah. He had pretty good numbers at Davis. I thought he was in a better blocker than I was expecting. I'm like, this guy is not getting thrown around. And I see a ton of, tight end prospects who just are like lunging and whiffing on tackles. Mm-hmm. And you're like, come on, man.
They don't know what they're doing. They're playing wide receiver, essentially.
Right. And you're like, I want to believe in you. I want to believe you can do something, but you're not showing it to me. Castles does. He's got a crazy, crazy name.
McCallan Castles.
Awesome. McCallan Castles. Like, he should probably start a law firm that is problematic after his NFL career goes under. But I like what he brings to the table.
I have a McCallan Castles. It's about 12 years aged over here.
From Scotland?
I mean, yeah. I mean, why would I import anything when I can check a bag?
It's beautiful. But yeah.
By the way, if anyone wants to come over, I have like one of the world's greatest scotch collections. I don't drink scotch.
I'm free.
It's proven extremely problematic. This is why we have multiple guest beds in the house. Because it's like, oh, I'll try some of your scotch. And it's like, why don't you do a full taster menu? And it's just because my wife's just
making people flights of scotch.
Yeah, pretty much. And I like smelling them. Okay, let's just be weird. I will smell. So, I mean, if you're cool with my nose being up in the bottle, like it'll burn off. It's alcohol. I'm not like spitting in it or anything. It's just like that.
Is this as we're drinking it?
No. This is at night because it's on my my bar cart, which I can actually see from my office here because I left the doors open today.
You know what you're talking about? You're just talking about a male version of a diffuser. It's just instead of having like lovely
actually, that's scent, what I should do because I do have a diffuser downstairs because we got a bit of a pee trap problem. We don't worry about it. And so we have a when we redid the downstairs, it's. Maybe people like personality. Maybe we'll find out they don't, and then we'll start from scratch again. what we redid downstairs, we had to keep digging and digging and digging because it turned out there's no foundation on our house, which was super fun to find out. And so, we live like mole people. All of our bedrooms are subterranean, literally. And in that, we had to find a way to get the bathroom. So there's a pump that pulls everything out. The problem is the pump doesn't leave anything in the pee trap. So if you don't close the drains, it gets a little stinky. So I do have an oil diffuser that just kind of, it's like, there's some really impressive ones. Next time you go to like a really nice hotel lobby, which I hope you all have the pleasure of doing soon, look for where they keep their diffuser. Cause I find it like in really interesting spots. And it's like it's like a hose that comes out of these big boxes. And they just pump out whatever their signature scent is. When I went to Cabo, I was like, oh my God, I got to get the signature scent. But like they were hiding them in really cool places. They would find like pieces of furniture and like there would just be this hole with a tube coming out of it.
I love the idea of someone turning into this live right now.
Yeah, right.
At this point.
Let me talk about oil diffuser. Regardless,
I've been in the market for one. I'm interested.
I don't really care about this diffuser at all. It kind of sucks. I should maybe try to diffuse scotch through it. I'm gonna look.
Has anyone tried it before?
I mean, surely they have.
There's a long Reddit post about it.
Yeah, right. I'm certain it's a Reddit post. Okay. Back to the task at hand here. Sorry, this is what happens when I don't get to sleep.
I love it.
Okay. If it all lays out the way that we want it to lay out, and again, we're not pushing strong, like, take this guy in the sixth, and this right. guy needs to go at 124. How about this? If you hold on to 124, which I'm certain the 49ers will not do,
yeah,
just because of the optics. But if you can't get anyone to take it off your hands at value, because they all know you're in too deep here, take Jordan Travis with 124.
Yeah.
Now it's like a 1-to-1. And I think that Jordan Travis is going to come out and be like, oh, shit, this guy was way better than Trey Lance. Maybe Here's that the thing. Helps you. Maybe it hurts you. I don't know.
Here's the thing. It's hard to find a quarterback who, I mean, it's I wouldn't say hard, but like if you draft a quarterback in the fourth round, like they could very easily outproduce Trey Lance. Like
totally.
Any quarterback. So like it's pretty easy to make that worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Trey Lance is still the quarterback three in Dallas, and we'll see if they take a quarterback. I mean, maybe they're in on the Jake and Dieter plan. So like let's say 124, Jordan Travis. Kamani Vidal, let's talk early, you know, 200, right? Just take him to pick whatever the 200 is. Bo Richter, take him with your last pick. Take him with your last pick. I think he's going to be there. I really do. And then what you got? Castle? Where do you think Castle
is? McCallum Castles, he feels like pretty late, you know? Okay. I think.
Sixth.
I don't think this is a particularly strong tight end class. I feel like last year's was hyped up quite a bit more. Castles feels seventh. He feels like a seventh round pick.
You got a lot of those. Malik Mustafa, we're talking third round, fourth round?
Malik Mustafa, fourth. I think he's a fourth round pick.
So what is that? 124 again?
Yeah.
And then George Helani.
He's like a seventh rounder. Sixth, seventh.
I think he's better than that. I think he's a fifth.
I do too. I do too.
But these are some big wins. These are the guys that you spend an hour with.
These are the guys that make your draft. Where you go, okay, we got one of our first
entire franchise.
Picks,
right? The entire franchise is predicated off of hitting on these picks. That's the only reason we're into this stuff. The entire operation is, hey, Fred Warner was a third round pick. George Kittle was a fifth round pick. And we just absolutely killed it with a quarterback in the last pick of the draft. The entire franchise is predicated. Deebo Samuel's a second day two pick. The entire franchise is predicated, and any good franchise is predicated on getting these hits. You can miss. You can miss just fine. You got to hit. You got to hit on some
of
them.
And you're going to miss. You're going to
miss. Oh, buddy, are you going to miss? I mean, they missed with the guy they traded three first-round draft picks for.
But it's okay. They're going to go get Jordan Travis, so it's all good.
I mean, they're fine. They're fine. They survived. They went to the Super Bowl last year. Like, it's all okay.
Here's the thing. Shanahan and Lynch have no business being as comfortable as they are. No. I wrote about this many times. Because they should have been shitting their pants. Should have been like, oh, God. And I'm not saying that's something I wanted. I'm saying the reality of whiffing on Trey Lance as bad as they did, they should have been like, oh, God, we're going to lose our jobs. And instead, they find Brock Purdy and they get to go, we are chilling.
They are
chilling
A-okay.
So hard.
And we can help them chill even more. They can spend even more time in Cabo every single year if they just listen to the 49ers Game Day podcast.
That's right.
Thanks to all the sickos out there. Thanks to everyone who joined us on whatever the hell.
If anybody has any diffuser thoughts or
diffuser thoughts, come over. And
that's going to be our next mailbag. Is just send us.
Is it mailbag? MALE, the mailbag.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, if anyone has any interior design, I'm still working on it,
dude.
You know, any diffuser recommendations? You know,
I went on like a weird manic streak the other day, and the kitchen is in superb shape.
Ooh,
the kitchen. We're operating on levels never before seen when I cleaned between 11 and 2 a.m. And maybe that's why I didn't get to sleep. All right. We gotta go. We gotta go do our jobs.
Appreciate you, sickos.
Sickos. Love you. Bye.